now we'll turn to our election generals, who will war game the outcomes after Thursday. And you have advice for us on how to bow out gracefully. They are John Sargent and Peter Hennessy, the mild and bitter of the polls.
Morning.
Good morning. So we'll get to the wargaming in a moment. Bowing out after an election, Peter.
Yes, elections are political wheels of fortune. And by first light on Friday, careers will have been made and broken, even if it's an inconclusive result. It's a brutal and capricious business. And through their heads this weekend, the big protagonists will be running very privately how they will depart with dignity. And there is a model for them. And it is Dirk Bogarde playing Sidney Carton on the scaffold in A Tale of Two Cities.
It is a far, far better thing I do than I have ever done. It is a far, far better rest I go to than I have ever known.
There you are. There's the model.
That's him going to the scaffold. It's pretty raw stuff, isn't it?
But we're here to cheer them up.
Lots of politicians, they do feel that. They feel this is, you know, not just the end for them, but people are going to be very hurt on Thursday night. There's no doubt about that. We just don't know who.
So you're telling us it's not so much, we're not predicting sort of the party leader's demise, but this is what individual MPs or now candidates are fearing. It's the end.
Well, it could be party leaders. It could be, and whatever happens, David Cameron this week talking about a career defining moment. I mean, and remember Enoch Powell's awful phrase, that's about right, all political careers go, and you give an imitation.
All political careers end in failure unless they're cut off unexpectedly at an unusually happy juncture. And he was right.
So, I mean, and obviously the examples, we tend to go back to Churchill. He dominates these things, and of course he does, because in 1945 he'd never been elected Prime Minister. And he wasn't then, because there was a Labour landslide. He was very, very hurt by all this. I mean, it was Eden described him in the last cabinet as a pretty wretched, poor old boy, miserable.
And his wife, Clemmie, said when the results came in, it could be a blessing in disguise. And he said, at the moment, it's certainly very well disguised.
So for 2 years, Churchill sulks. He gets on with writing his six-volume history of the Second World War, but then, amazingly, he manages to pull himself together and aim himself once again at the Labour opposition.
Socialists complain that we take every advantage of national misfortunes to win popularity for our party at their expense. When these misfortunes have been brought upon us by their mistakes and incompetence, it is our duty as an opposition, to mark them with censure.
And he clung on as Prime Minister in his Indian summer premiership, 51 to 55, because he used to say, I never like leaving the pub till closing time. And it was very difficult to prise him out of number 10, wasn't it, John?
Very difficult to prise him out, but interesting, too, that Churchill stays on. People imagine Cameron goes. Well, he might decide to resign if he loses the election, whatever that precisely means. But it's interesting how you've got to remember the raw politics of this, that Eden was always waiting there in the wings, but Churchill just was an incredibly dominant figure, and he then goes on to lose the election of 1950. So he loses two elections. He's never been elected Prime Minister, and this is the joy of our system. In 1951, the popular vote goes to Labour, but the Conservatives have majority, and Churchill comes back and is elected for the first time as Prime Minister.
And it's important to, from history, remember the public have no job picking the Prime Minister. We can push off as far as it goes picking the Prime Minister.
We pick a parliament, and out of the parliamentary arithmetic, somebody who can command the confidence of the House of Commons has to emerge. That's the test. That's the drill.
And in a moment, you're going to tell us about the three options as you see them as a constitutional historian after the poll. Let's go to 1974. We're all obsessing about this because it was the year with two general elections. Let's listen to Ted Heath after he's lost in February.
When I took office as Prime Minister in June 1970, I pledged myself and the government to the service of the nation. Now, tonight, I renew that pledge.
That's Ted's version of Sidney Carton. Hadn't quite got the poetry, but
hasn't
he believed
got the idea
all that.
He's lost either. Yes. I'm outside as a young reporter, and we're waiting and waiting for 4 days for Ted Heath to realise that he's lost the election and the Liberals won't help him.
Yes, he's not facing the end there, Peter Hennessy. He's saying, I'm ready, I'm here, I've got my pens out.
That's right, he's facing the end of that premiership. but he's not facing the prospect of carrying on and coming back. And in fact, he was never reconciled to losing that election. He never had tranquility
He sunk for the rest of his life, particularly about his successor. Margaret Thatcher. But the key point here is that what happens and may happen on Friday is this whole question of who's in charge and whether they have legitimacy. Now, Ted Heath thought, why shouldn't I stay on and see if I can cobble it together, even though it looked as if he had lost? So we've got to consider not just the constitutional position we're going on about. We've got to consider, what about the politics of the party? So Heath stays on and fights the election in October of 74, and still Harold Wilson wins. But it's interesting, when Harold Wilson resigns, which is in 76, Harold Wilson is talking still about keeping his party together.
I hope I'll be remembered as one who, in the face of the biggest challenges, above all economic problems the country has faced in its history, kept the party together, kept the country together, kept the country united. I wish I could have been Prime Minister in happier times and easier times.
Very interesting that. Harold Wilson's great genius was holding his party together through thick and thin. Brilliant at it. But also, like so many other Prime Ministers, regretting that the time in which he or she was Prime Minister was so beset with problems, they couldn't do entirely what they wanted to. And Lord Hailsham was asked if ever he regretted not becoming Prime Minister, having been very close in 63, and he said, no, I've known all the Prime Ministers since Balfour. Very few have died happy men. The regrets go with them.
And on the most regretful of all, let's listen in terms of bowing out, because we know some candidates and others will be doing this in a few days. Here we go to Margaret Thatcher.
It's been a tremendous privilege to serve this country as Prime Minister. Now it's time for a new chapter to open, and I wish John Major all the luck in the world. He'll be splendidly served, and he has the makings of a great Prime Minister, which I'm sure he'll be in very short time. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Trying to be brave, but of course crying an awful lot at that time and never recovering. She said years later she would drive down Whitehall expecting to turn into Downing Street. I mean, years afterwards, I mean, she just never got over this defeat. And what's interesting is that she couldn't keep her party together. And that's why she was defeated by her own people. So we're back to this question of who can keep their party together, let alone the country, after one of these, if it's a defeat on Thursday night for whichever party, can they hold on and why should they?
And that's
politics will be very important.
That's a reminder of John Major's problem in his final months. And yet you've picked him from the archive, Peter, because you think of all the ones we're hearing, he bows out the best.
It's a touch of genius on John Major's part, and I won't spoil it because we need to hear it, that just exactly the way he did it. This is the model for them. Sidney Carton plus John Major equals dignified exit.
I propose to see Her Majesty in just a few moments. The second reason I'll say no more now is that after that I hope that Norma and I will be able, with the children, to get to the Oval in time for lunch and for some cricket this afternoon. Thank you all very much indeed. Thank you.
But, of course, the difference then was he expected. Didn't think he could beat the Labour landslide that was coming. So,
point is there. We're listening in 97 to what was perhaps expected by him then.
Yes.
So, I promised a war game of the options. First to you, Peter Hennessy, what are they?
Well, there's three phases that could be possible from Friday. One is a rerun of 2010, when the two principles are there's continuity of government, the Queen must always have a government, and that the Queen is not embarrassed by appearing to be drawn into political partisanship. And the two expectations flow from that are the parties will work it out before it's plain to the Queen for whom she should send, and that David Cameron stays as Prime Minister until that moment. And there's only an hour difference between the Queen having Prime Ministers. If that doesn't work, we go into phase two, which we haven't faced since January 1924, when Baldwin faced the House of Commons with a King's speech. And it could well be that if David Cameron does fight it out on the floor of the House of Commons with a Queen's speech, that the Labour opposition do what Ramsay MacDonald did and have an amendment to the Queen's speech, which thanks the Queen for her gracious speech, but expresses no confidence in her advisers, i.e. her ministers. And now, if that's lost, I can't imagine David Cameron will cling on any longer. But if he did, made, we get into the trap of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, which is the new player. It's a 2011 statute, and that is the dark matter of the British Constitution. We know it's there, but we don't know what it's like. And once you're on the tramlines of that, it can lead to two votes of confidence, which are both, if both are lost, you have a general election in July. Heaven forbid, Paddy.
I think the key thing to remember is that parties will not want to go into an immediate general election, another one, not straight away. There could well be a general election later this year, and everyone will want to know who did what and when the moment the results came in on Friday. So we're talking not so much about bean counting and working out what all the seats are, not necessarily. We're talking about the politics of all this. We're talking about who is going to be blamed for either keeping the Tories in power or pushing them out.
And it gets,
that's the crucial point.
And it's very old-fashioned. It's very who gets on with whom in Parliament, isn't it? It's not just about who commands. It's who likes each other. So actually, we need to be the people to say, Clinton famously said, it's the economy, stupid. This morning, you two are coming out and saying, it's the politics, stupid.
That's
and
right.
And the people, stupid. And also within your own party, because the hatreds within the parties are absolutely crucial at such difficult times. There's not much gratitude amongst the political class. They're not known for it.
But if we go back to 1923-24, I'm sorry if this sounds really boring.
Your first election,
but it's actually my first election. No, it's absolutely critical, because then what happens is that you get Baldwin, first of all, with the biggest number of seats. He then stays on as Prime Minister. But why does Ramsay MacDonald and the Liberals, why do they get together? Why do they succeed a few months later? Because they both fought on the side, would you believe it, of free trade. So there's a sense of legitimacy. These are the parties that won the policy argument of the election
and
of 1923.
And just to join the two of you together, crucially, they also, Ramsay MacDonald also used the procedure of an amendment to the Queen's speech.
That's King's speech, yes.
The King's speech, I beg your pardon. Now I've got the monarch wrong. But the point is, that's the one, what you want us to remember. That's possible this time.
Now, it used to be always accepted that was tantamount to losing a vote of confidence, losing the Queen's speech. With the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, that isn't the case anymore. But in real terms, human terms, if David Cameron lost an amendment to the Queen's speech, I can't see him staying on any longer. I really can't.
Also, the key thing to remember in Parliament, all kinds of manoeuvres are possible, including the obvious one, abstaining. One major party might abstain.
OK. And I want to introduce as well one final thought, which you can't discuss, because right at the end, never rule out the prospect of a surprise win. We mustn't be the people who rule that out, must we? Thank you all very much indeed. Well, both is what I mean by all. But it felt like there were so many other voices in the room.